Okay, Matthew here, and welcome to our lecture on a human resource management lecture on induction. So if you are looking at your PowerPoint slides that you've got available to you on Canvas, we'll just go through those together. So the first thing that we're looking at is the summary. So one of the things that we're going to look at today is we're going to explain the benefits of orientation. We're going to have a look at the design. And we're also going to have a look at different types of socialization. And so there's some different terminology that we're going to talk about in terms of induction, orientation, socialization, and some of the slight differences there. So looking now at the slide that's headed orientation, it's good for us to consider, you know, what are the benefits of orientating people? When should we do it? What are some of the different options available to us in terms of orientation programs? What is informal orientation and why would we do it? What sort of packages might there be available, and how do we follow up on orientation? They're very important considerations. So let's just move on to the slide that talks about socialisation and what actually is socialisation. So socialisation is becoming part of the organisation in lots of different ways. So imagine you're a new person coming into the organisation and you want to somehow be integrated. You want to be integrated so that you know the systems. You want to be integrated that you're accepted culturally. You want to be integrated so that you are accepted and a valued team member and are socialised and get along well with your colleagues and supervisors and others in the place. So when we talk about induction and orientation, it's becoming part of the organisation. However, moving on to the next slide, regardless of whatever we do, whether we put in place some sort of formal orientation induction program or not, people will try and fit in and socialise themselves regardless of what we put in place. So the point here is socialisation occurs regardless of what the organisation offers the new employee. If no orientation or induction takes place, the employee still begins to try to fit in with the organisation and learn about its ways. But we want people to mix into the organisation, fit into our culture, follow the way we want things to be done in terms of procedures and knowing what our policies are and so forth. So it's important that we actually put the right, communicate the right things in place to our new employees and help them to feel part of the organisation. One of the things to be mindful of is that when people join the organisation, that first few months is a critical period. A lot of people leave the organisation within the first few months, and that is often because induction and orientation is not done well. So socialisation has a relationship with turnover and retention, organisational commitment, and culture in terms of what are the values and norms being required. Moving on to the slide that talks about the newcomer. So if we have a well-managed induction orientation program, it can help new employees feel as though they belong, and it can reduce the chances of them leaving before they get the chance to perform. In other words, let's get orientation and induction right, and if we do so, we've got a better chance of hanging on to our employees. Moving on to the slide that says why. So it's estimated that almost in 1 in 5 new employees leave the organisation before the end of the first few months. So yes, that first initial period of time when an employee joins your organisation is critical and highlights the importance of good induction and orientation programs. Moving on to the slide that says why. So new employees can feel isolated, confused, they can struggle to learn new procedures, they can suffer with low morale and commitment, and they can actually break the rules, probably because they don't even know the rules. So these are all reasons that highlight why good orientation and induction programs are good. So some of the things that we might cover, just looking at the slide now that says some objectives. We might introduce people to the company. We might review important policies and practices. We might review the benefits and services. We might discuss the benefit plans. We might need to get people to complete their employment documents. We might review what our expectations are as employers. And we might set some expectations of the employees. We can introduce people to their colleagues and fellow workers, give them a tour of the facilities, show them around and discuss aspects of the job and introduce them to those aspects as well. So looking at the slide that talks about three perspectives, there's three different areas that are often covered in a new employee's induction orientation socialisation program. First one is looking at all those administrative things that need to be looked at. The second one is trying to integrate them socially. And the third one is to make sure that they're aware of all the systems and so forth as part of what we call cultural control. So I'll just go through the slides that discuss each of those. So from an administrative perspective, we need to give them information. And so we can say, this is our system on how to report a hazard. This is our system on how do we use this information. This is the system of how to put in your leave form. This is the system of how to record your hours. So there's a lot of administrative stuff that needs to be communicated to new employees. A lot of the content is largely what, where, when type information. And there is often a lot of this sort of administrative information that we are trying to communicate to new employees. So it's very important that we are mindful of the fact that there can be information overload. This next area, the social integration perspective, is really, really important. And some organisations overlook this and they just focus largely on the other two areas, the control and also the administrative, but it's really, really important to make sure that we integrate people socially, help them form those relationships with their colleagues and with their supervisors, and help them to feel part of the organisation. Some of you will be aware of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and one of the needs that we all have is people. Is the need for socialisation. So the informal groupings that form of just, you know, come and have a coffee with me, come and sit down with me at morning tea and lunchtime, those informal groupings, you know, come and have a chat with me about this around the photocopier, they're really, really important. And so we want to help people form those informal groupings. And hello, how are you going? Yes, so I've already started the lecture, so I'm recording it. So what you've missed out on, you can listen and catch up. Okay. So, yes, so the social integration of people when they first join the organisation is really, really important. And so part of our job as leaders and managers in organisations is to do whatever we can to try and help people feel that there are other people in the organisation that they can integrate and socialise with as well. So a practical thing that we can actually do is allocate a mentor for new employees. So when a new employee joins our organisation, if we can allocate another person to just say, look, can you show them around, show them where the toilets are, make sure that they're being looked after, And there's someone that looks out for them and immediately is like a friend to them when they arrive in the case, arrive in the organisation. Yes, yeah, so people that come from different experiences might need different efforts of looking after them. So if you're a school leaver, you're not actually used to the workforce yet. And so if you've got some people that are school leavers joining your organisation, new graduates, but some people might not have even studied. Some people might have actually left school. They're used to the environment of being in a school and they might have joined your organisation still very young. And so you've got to think, well, how do I integrate these people into the organisation? Because they're really young and maybe most of the other people in my organisation are at a different stage to these people. Same thing with the long-term unemployed. The long-term unemployed, if you've suddenly now given them a job... If you've now given them a job, then you might need to put a bit of extra time into them to try and help them get used to being back in the workplace and to help them socially integrate with others. So we just need to be thinking of that, that people might have special circumstances that we need to put a bit of effort into. The other examples given here is people with disabilities, but there'll be other groupings of people. So just to recap, the three sort of areas that can be focused on when we do induction. The first one is administrative. The second one is the social side. And the last one is cultural. And so this is all that side of things of this is how we do things within our organisation. And we're trying to induct people. Excuse my phone making a few noises there. We're trying to induct people to this is how we do things around here. These are our values and those sorts of things. So some might say, you know, is it indoctrination? Is it brainwashing? But for example, you know, come and do things the virgin way. You know, they'll have the virgin way of doing things. That's part of trying to get people indoctrinated to fit in with the culture. And every organisation has a culture, which are largely based on their values and their mission. And part of what we do in the induction phase is we're trying to educate people of this is the way we do things around here. These are the things we value. So when we talk about induction, we're really sort of thinking, well, it's part of the initial training and development of a new employee because they've joined the organisation. But it's more than training and development. And so part of the topic that we're looking at for this period of time in the course is we're looking at training and ongoing career development for new employees. So it could be argued that orientation and induction is actually part of the training and development process. But when you think about the socialisation and the cultural fit side of it as well, you can see that it's not as clear cut as being part of the training and development process. But yes, we can loosely attach it to the training and development process that it's the start of doing training and development. But it's also crucial to make sure that the recruitment and selection process is not wasted, because part of getting people socialised and inducted starts when they first make contact with you. They start learning about your organisation when they inquire about that job. And as they go through the whole process of recruitment and selection, they're engaging with your organisation and learning about your organisation. And so really that whole socialisation, that whole induction of being part of the organisation, at one level, starts during the recruitment and selection process. So let's not waste the recruitment and selection process in helping people discover what we're all about as an organisation and help them to feel part of it, even though they're not fully part of it until we have both parties have signed the employment contract and they've started with us officially. The other thing is to consider is whose responsibility is it? So do we leave induction completely up to the human resource manager or the human resource management department? Is it the responsibility of those involved in the recruitment process? Do we leave it up to those that are in charge of training and development in your organisation? What's the role of the line manager and supervisor? And what's the role of other people like buddies or colleagues and peers? So we need to think about that as human resource professionals that are trying to make sure that we've got induction systems in place in our organisation. We need to consider, well, whose responsibility is it? Now, in most organisations that I've worked in, I would view it that if I'm the human resource professional, that it's my responsibility to make sure that there's a system in place that works, but it's not my responsibility to actually implement every aspect of it. And that's the same with most of the functions. And so there is a huge responsibility in most organisations that's placed with the line manager or supervisor. And this links with an assignment question that is often used in this unit that talks about how can a human resource manager support line managers or supervisors in performing their human resource management functions. And it's the same thing here really when it comes to induction and orientation. The role of the human resource person is often to put the systems in place. And then we have to work out what that system looks like. And in most organisations nowadays, the line manager has got a huge responsibility in the induction process. But also, the human resource manager might make sure that there's a regular orientation program for new employees. And so it might be in January every year when we have a lot of new recruits. Okay, we're going to run an orientation program for all new employees. And then we might have online stuff for people as they join the organisation in between. And then we might have another session in 3 months' time after that for the next batch of new employees. So what is our system and whose responsibility is it? And then we need to think about the actual program that we've got in place. What's the induction program? What's it consist of? How does it meet both the needs of the organisation, the individual units within the organisation, and also the needs of the individual? And so a typical overall program might be that you've actually got something like a new employee handbook that's got a lot of the information that all employees can access, and typically that'll be online. And so you've got a whole heap of material for new employees, and you might actually have some modules or some sort of way of encouraging employees to work through that information in a certain period of time. Some organisations may even structure it so that they have a little quiz, and so you read the policy on safety, and then there might be a couple of questions that people need to correctly answer after that. And if they don't answer correctly, they've got the opportunity to go back and review it, and then move through the material in that way. And then part of the process might be that things get ticked off as they complete self moving through certain aspects of the program. Or if they need to attend some face-to-face, you know, that gets signed off as well. And you can keep a record of that on your human resource information system of all the induction stages that each new employee has completed. That's good from a number of points of view. obviously the person knows what they're supposed to be doing, when they're supposed to be doing it, because they've covered it. But also, from a legal point of view, if you've got some sort of record of people, say, for example, reading and understanding the safety policy, when it comes to issues such as an employee being injured in the workplace, if they try to sue you as an employer for negligence, you've got some evidence in their employee records that they've undertaken certain training as part of their induction processes, however you choose to implement those programs. But think about how you want to do it, whether it's going to be face-to-face, there's going to be online elements, whether it's going to be structured as part of some sort of formal come into an orientation day or morning, or whether it's going to be on a more informal basis, sitting down with your supervisor and going through stuff together. All of this needs to consider the needs of both the organisation and the person, the individual. Now, I'm going to talk about some different formats. Now, these formats are from a bloke called Art, who's done a lot of research in the area of induction and orientation, and he often uses the word socialisation. So that's a word we've talked about a bit already. And he's broken the formats down into these different areas. Is it formal or informal? Is it individual or collective? Is it fixed or is it variable? Is it serial or is it random? And does it have, is it characterised by investiture or divestiture? And I'm going to talk about each of these formats in a moment. So that last one, just as a little bit of a preliminary, is talking about whether we recognise the person as a person or whether we're trying to indoctrinate them to fit a particular mould. Like the army historically would often say, we don't ask you to think, we ask you to do as you're told. So are you investing in the person as a person who's able to be creative and think and use their own initiative, or are we just telling them what to do? I'll unpack that last point a little bit more when we get to it. So let's just go through each of these, starting with formal and... Actually, no, it doesn't start with that. The first one is collective and individual. So this one here is the extent to which our orientation programs are dealing with just one person or many people. And what we've got up here on the slide is the extent to which new employees are submitted together or individually to the socialisation procedures. For example, are they going to participate in group training or training on the job? So a lot of small businesses, it'll be more individual. Someone comes in and joins and you will just do individual induction programs for them. But a larger organisation will probably do a bit of both. They'll do a bit of individual stuff with the person, but then they'll bring people collectively into, okay, we've got a new employee orientation day on Tuesday the 27th of January. We want all new employees to come in and we're going to go through a whole heap of stuff together that everyone needs to have a look at. And so then that's collective. So collective basically means, are we doing it with lots and lots of people? And individual means, are we actually tailoring the program for just individual people? Does that make sense? Any questions? It's okay. The next one, is it formal or informal? So the way Arts categorise a formal one is the extent that you actually remove from other employees to come in and do some sort of formal induction training. So, okay, guys, we're going to take you off the front line of doing your jobs today while you come into this room, and we're going to sit down, we're going to go through the orientation stuff that we want to go through with you. That's more of a formal program. So it says here the extent the newcomer is separated from regular organisational members and undergoes custom-made socialisation experience. For example, a police academy or on-the-job training. So that's a good example of real separation from the rest of the workforce while they focus on getting people trained up and orientated to the organisation and what they're going to be doing. So that's another way that ARTS talks about the training. How formal is it in terms of removing people from the workplace and bringing them into the one place to do the training? And it's fairly informal if people are doing it in their normal work units and maybe just going into the office of the supervisor and having a chat about things. The other way that ARTS categorises things is he talks about sequential versus random, and that's the extent steps that lead to mastery of job are specified. So basically, if you're saying to someone, before you can move on to doing this, you've got to do this first. And so you're specifying step one, step two, step three. So it's quite sequential. So the first thing I'm going to orientate you in is step one. And so if you're going to learn how to give someone CPR, if you're coming in to do CPR, and that's part of what we want everyone to do as part of their orientation, the first thing we're going to go through is before you can actually start looking at the person, you've got to check out the danger for yourself. And so there's a step that comes first, and so you deal with that because I don't know if you've done first aid training or whatever, but the St. John's talk about Dr. ABC, and the D is the first step. Danger. And then the next thing you do is, okay, well, let's have a look at response. There's no point just going in there and giving the person mouth to mouth if you haven't checked first if they actually need it. So that's the same thing in here, that the extent that there's certain steps that are required first before they can do the other steps. That's sequential. Random is it doesn't matter which thing you give them. So in terms of orientation, there might be some things, well, it doesn't matter which policies and procedures. It doesn't matter which policies and procedures I actually give people. It doesn't matter what the order is, that's random. But if they need to be in a certain order, that's sequential. Does that make sense, or do you want me to expand that a little bit more? Yeah. Okay. Similar is whether it's fixed or variable. So this one is more to do with time. It's very similar to the previous one, which was sequential. But this one is basically saying certain steps have to be done over a period of time. So we might say there are certain things that have to be done in the first day. So these are the steps that have got to be done in the first day. These are the steps that have got to be done in the first week. These are the steps that have got to be done in the first month. And so we've got some fixed steps that are part of their induction or socialisation process. Now, variable is it doesn't really matter so much when they do things. That's the difference between the two extremes. Fixed is, no, this step has to be done within this time period, whereas variable is, okay, it doesn't really matter when we do this, but we just got to get it done sometime. Any questions on that? Okay, the next one is it's called serial versus disjunctive. And that's where the extent in which there is someone who is present as a role model. Someone who does the same sort of job. So let's assume I'm a bank teller. I'm a new bank teller. I'm a new person. You can buddy me up with another bank teller who is going to do the same job as me. And so here we'd actually see that that person holds the same position, and that person, another bank teller, can function as a role model. So he uses the word serial to refer when those role models are available. So if I'm a new bank teller and they line me up with another new bank teller, he's saying that process is serial. In other words, there are available role models in the same position that can help me adjust and fit into this new job. He says a disjunctive process is where, okay, Matthew, you're the new bank teller, but we don't actually have any other bank tellers because we're a one-man branch. So there's no one around really that can act as a role model, so good luck. So a disjunctive process is where there's no other role models around to help me learn the ropes and adjust into that position who are doing the same job. I've just got to work it out for myself as best I can. I mean, maybe the organisation is still going to put in place things to support me. But they would identify that situation as being disjunctive. Oh, poor Matthew doesn't have any other bank tellers in that new branch because it's a one-man branch. So can you appreciate the differences between serial and disjunctive? Okay. And finally, is investiture or divestiture, the extent to which processes can affirm the identity of the newcomer. That's investiture, whereas divestiture tries to deny or change the identity of the newcomer. So in some countries, your military training can be an example of where you are having more of a divestiture approach, where you've just got to fit in the mould of exactly how we tell you you've got to do and think and react and respond. Most organisations, particularly here in Australia, would have more of an investiture approach, where whilst you still operate within controls and boundaries because you've got policies and procedures in place, you want people to think, you want people to use their heads, you want people to speak up if you think there's something wrong that needs to be rectified. And so that's part of affirming the identity of the newcomer. We have employed you because we value who you are and what you have to say and think. And so that's another way ARTS categorises orientation, induction, socialisation process. He says the degree to which we recognise this uniqueness of our individuals, or the degree to which we're just trying to mould them into the way we want them to be moulded and think the way we want them to think. So divestiture is we are denying the individual identity and uniqueness of the human beings. Investiture is we're embracing it. So that's probably one of the more complex ones to understand the difference between the two, but how are you going with that? Any initial questions, comments? Yes.
I haven't come across any really thing that I've seen that people try to use this tactic before.
That's right. But if you were, say, in South Korea, North Korea. If you're in North Korea, particularly if you're in the military, for example, I would imagine, I could be wrong, but I would imagine that there'd be more of a divestiture way in which they'd try to socialise you, induct you into that particular environment.
Is that a bad thing?
Like, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a way of categorising processes. So what ARTS is doing, he's not saying any of these are good or bad. He's saying this is a way of describing and working out your process. So what he's encouraging us to do is, what process do you actually want to apply in your orientation programs? Have a think about these different options of doing it. Are you going to have a formal process, or are you going to have an informal process? Are you going to do it individually or collectively? Is it going to be more fixed in time or variable in time? Is it more serial in terms of there has to be quite sequential steps, or can there be random steps? Are you going to identify and embrace the uniqueness of all your individuals, or do you want to just, you know, mould them into a particular way of how we need them to do things? And that will depend on what your organisation is and what ARTS is saying. Let's consider these different ways of approaching it, and you make the decision of how you want to structure your induction programs. But here are some different ways of thinking about how you put it together. Yes, so in the context of how we're discussing things in this particular part of today's lecture, is we're talking about induction, is so when person first joins the organisation. But in terms of ongoing training and development, I think these are very valid points for ongoing training and development as well, because you might in certain aspects be more divestiture. So there might be some elements where, okay, we want you to use your head and think, but there might be other aspects of, no, we actually all need to be doing it this way. And that's why we've got this particular training program. It's got to be done this way. And so there is less embracing of individual perspectives, and more taking on board exactly what the organisation tells you to do. So, yes, I think that's a very valid point that you've just raised there. Over time, can an organisation change its stance on in training in terms of its investiture or divestiture approach? And yes, they can. Okay. That's the person who wrote those different things. His name is Juiced Arts. He says that individual socialisation can lead to innovation. That's if we do things individually, but employees also found to be less loyal and have higher turnover if you do things on an individual basis. And so he was arguing more for a collective way. And institutional socialisation can lead to conformity and loyalty. So he's saying that if you can put in place programs, that's a good thing, induction programs, that's what he's doing. And combining both socialisation to the organisation and helping the individual socialisation is something that's going to impact positively. Okay, well, that's all that I wanted to cover on the area of induction. It's induction, orientation and socialisation. They're sort of different terms that we've used there. So this recording is going to go up onto Canvas, and it's part of the larger topic of career planning and training and development, which is going to be put up as part of the voice recordings for next week as well. And so we're now going to have a break now, and that recording on training and development will also be put up in Canvas shortly.